This is Radioactive, an environmental and social justice news journal for January 5th, 2017. This is Meredith DeFrancesco. Today, despite overwhelming public opposition, the Maine Board of Environmental Protection voted to support proposed changes to environmental regulations that would allow metallic mining in the state of Maine. This is now the third time in almost 5 years that the Department of Environmental Protection has tried to push rule changes through the state and legislature, where it has been voted down. Widespread public opposition has organized around combating the DEP's proposed rule changes while trying to offer alternative protections to the state's current inadequate statute. Changes to Maine's mining law were originally designed by J.D. Irving, who has interests in mining Bald Mountain in Aroostook County. Today's Board of Environmental Protection vote kicks the rule changes to the legislature. We have with us today Lindsay Newland-Bowker, the Environmental Risk Manager for Bowker Associates, Science and Research in the Public Interest, on the phone with us today. Welcome again to the program, Lindsay.
Hi, Meredith, and Happy New Year to you and the crew there at WERU.
Happy New Year. Well, today the Board of Environmental Protection met in Augusta regarding changes to Maine's metallic mining regulations and passed the rules unanimously. We want to get into great detail on the myriad of plans, players, and incongruities that have been active in this issue, but tell us what happened today.
Well, about an hour ago, the Board of Environmental Protection unanimously approved the rules over the 100% public opposition to them being advanced to the legislature. The public input from the outset this round was for BEP not to undertake any further rulemaking until fatal flaws in the legislative framework were fixed. Not just the lobbyist written rush through metallic mining statute itself, but also some discovered fundamental conflicts with conservation law, which includes, which none of us knew, a 1985 mining on public land statute, which, among other things, authorizes the draining or diversion or use of lakes, rivers, and streams to facilitate mining. The appropriate thing for DEP to do as an environmental authority was to write to the legislature and explain that the statutes themselves need to get fixed before any further rulemaking should be undertaken.
When,
that did not happen.
And when was that 1985 mining on public lands statute revealed?
Well, it actually came out of Lou Kingsbury's work. Lou Kingsbury has made, in fact, it's one of the wonderful things about this round, is so many independent voices who had deeply researched different aspects of natural resources and human impacts came forward. They came forward, in fact, last legislative session, and Lewd was public land, mining on public land. And in the context of supporting and researching his work, I discovered that there actually was a 1985 mining on public land statute that never came up. JSC, ENR, the legislative committee, never mentioned that. They were aware of the conflict. They were aware of the implications. They were aware that under Maine law, if there's a conflict between two regulations or two statutes, compliance with either one is deemed compliance with the law. Should I say that again? Because that's pretty weighty.
Yes.
So if you have a statute that allows the use of lakes, rivers, and streams for mine wastes or for any other purpose, under the mining on public land statute, even though the metallic mining statute didn't authorize that and may try to discourage that, you can go by the other statute and still be in compliance with law. In other words, if these conflicts aren't resolved into a single, unified, coherent, non-conflicting public policy on public lands, which includes lands for Maine's future and lands that have conservation status, all lands that are owned by the state are affected by the mining on public land statute.
And how would... So, go ahead.
So, obviously, everybody was strongly insisting that that be resolved before any rules were written, because once you write rules to implement what is and make those rules in full compliance and submission to the laws that are, the outcome can't possibly be what the public would want or expect.
So instead, what happened?
They just approved it. The main objection under the metallic mining statute is equally offensive to the public at large. Basically, the statute allowed on-site groundwater contamination within the mining area. There's no other statute anywhere else on the face of the earth, not even in the craziest banana republic, that allows such a thing for mining, which is the number one polluter among all other industrial sectors. Mm-hmm. But in the last minute setting in which the statute, the mining statute, was rushed through, the JSCENR, the Legislative Committee, was told that the groundwater provisions simply reflect what the conditions already were at Bald Mountain. In other words, that Bald Mountain was already polluted, and not to worry about including that. It just, you know, it just allows a continuing condition to exist and for the miner not to get caught up in any charges that they contributed to it or whatever. I don't know what the...
No matter what the increase of pollution might be?
I'm sorry?
No matter what the increase of pollution might be
exactly,
by the mining operations?
Exactly. So always, in all, even Banana Republic mining statutes, the standard is background. So there are some instances of naturally occurring background conditions that are below drinking water standards, but you're never allowed to pollute an entire area up to the worst condition that you have on site. You know, that's just not how it's done. So after years of, and it is years now, you know, it's almost 5 years, of everybody, the, you know, NRCM, the Sierra Club, Audubon, Maine Rivers, Appalachian Trails, Nature Conservancy, offering really sound ways to try to work within the rules to offer as much protection as possible, having lost the case to not allow this groundwater provision in the first place. Finally, this year, everybody sort of came together and said, no, that's it. You know, we want that change. We want the statute made right, and we want these conflict issues with conservation law sorted out. But the board voted to go ahead anyway. They did concede to the public one voice on statutory changes to also send along a note that they were in the process of drafting a few minutes ago to the legislature listing the specific aspects of statutes and law that limited them in accomplishing what they thought was appropriate and which had also been strenuously put forward in public comment. So that much will happen. It will go to the legislature with that list of statutory questions more than recommendations, but it goes with a request for them to approve these existing rules and therefore bring the existing statute into full implementation.
You are listening to Radioactive on WERU. Again, we are speaking with Lindsay Newland Bowker with Bowker Associates, Science and Research in the Public Interest. We spoke with her this afternoon, directly after the Board of Environmental Protection voted to support proposed changes to Maine law that would ease environmental regulation and open up the state to metallic mining. Bowker monitored the public hearing prior to the BEP's vote this afternoon. The proposed law will now proceed to the legislature.
Hendrik Gideon, who you may have interviewed previously, he's a professional public policy wonk like me. I think he taught public policy somewhere at the university level. His quote is perfect. He said, "How can we reach the right decision if we can't trust the materials in front of us?" That the way the DEP brought information to the board so obscured the fundamental issues that the public was trying to bring forward and the science the public was trying to bring forward.
And again, sorry, this is, you were just using acronyms, but to the Department of Environmental Protection presented the Board of Environmental Protection with information, and it allowed...
It's so thing, but it was basically how they chewed up and mangled the very discerning, very clean public input. For example, one of the very powerful voices that came forward this round, it took quite a while to bring forward a voice like that, is Bruce Taylor, who's with the University of Maine. He's a medical doctor, and he happens to be a global expert on public health impacts of large-scale toxic exposures. And the way he characterized it was, it was like a shell game. He said, in response to really devastating economic and public health data that he brought forward, that's mining-specific, that DEP simply mentioned public health 23 times in different parts of their presentation of materials or even in different parts of the rule, but that that's not protection if you don't actually do something with that to make sure that those public health risks don't emerge. I'll give you his exact quote. Dr. Taylor said, "What they've done is a shell game here with words, trickery to create a false assurance of public protection. I'm sure you know that medical doctors don't talk like that." Dr. Taylor felt that all of the data that he brought forward on public health risks was just disregarded. Craig Terrell, he and his wife Betsy live on Carr Pond, which is directly in the shadow of Bald Mountain, and they've tried to bring forward information about, you know, what's at risk there, which is pretty typical of what would be at risk going all the way across that part of Maine, not so different from the entire UT up there. And Craig said at the end of his testimony, he said, if you knew there was some way to poison your downstream neighbors, would you? Nick Bennett of NRCM, who's probably one of the better informed continual presences in this process.
Again, from the NRCM Natural Resources Council of Maine.
Yes, he's a staff scientist there. And he's been very deeply engaged in the mining issue, and he's brought forward a lot of accurate, well-researched, scientific and other evidence. His comment was, we're still getting gobbledygook with no clear mechanism for ensuring that miners are responsible for what harm they may cause, speaking to one of his main issues, which is financial assurance. So it's a smoke and mirror show. I guess the sum of all of the public frustration and public comment and this approval today is that there are some folk at the DEP that are very clever with this kind of rhetoric and language. You can make it sound like all the bases are covered and everything is like peachy keen. But when you get right down underneath it and you look at the actual details and the actual provisions, there's no there there. So I would say that's a fair summary of the public impression, but expressed from different specialized interests. Jeff Reardon, who Trout Unlimited, just an outstanding high-caliber advocate for fish habitat, said that, described the way DEP presented all of what they had accomplished in this rule as fully protective. But in fact, when you looked underneath, it was only based on only some things were protected that were already under scenic quality protection of special designation. And none of it was specifically addressed to the importance per se of a critical habitat, leaving more than half of all the vital, unique habitat that might be exposed to mining without any protection at all. So it's like a shell game. I guess that's the way to characterize what each individual, very well-informed, very articulate, very powerful individual advocate who spoke today, characterized what DEP had done. Nobody feels that this is the BEP. They're just citizens like us. You know, they're unpaid citizens. They depend on the department for the technical and scientific work. to back up and support their work and inform their decisions. And if you listen carefully to the tape, if you hear it, the answers that they get back to their questions are as gobbledygook and muddy as the answers that the public gets back. It goes within weeks over to the legislature. It will be heard by the JSC-ENR. The JSC-ENR have never been willing to address. They've been aware of these conflicts for a very long time.
That's Joint Committee Environmental and Natural Resources Committee.
Joint Standing Committee for mm-hmm. Environment and Natural Resources. And it's going to be doubly hard to explain all this to them this year because it's basically all new folk. The only folk that are carried over are Tom Saviello, the former chair, and John Martin, who's been the chief architect of the original statute.
Lindsay, can you bring us back and give a thumbnail sketch of the history just to remind people these rule changes were originally proposed, as you said, you identified the legislative conduits, but originally proposed by Irving and its corporate LLC with mining interests.
Right.
Can you just remind listeners that history and what exactly they have been trying to do with the rule changes to allow opening mining again? Specifically, right.
We may never actually know the real history, but a colleague of mine happened to be the mining economist that first twigged Irving that there was even a possibility of metallic mining at Ball Mountain in Aroostook. And they went off and talked to Pierce Atwood in Portland, Maine, who had been the attorneys of record for every single entity that had looked at any mining deposit in Maine back when all this other interest in mining had evolved in the 70s and 80s. So they had in their file drawer a list of all the environmental laws in Maine that were impossible for a metallic mine at Bald Mountain or any other deposit that we know of to achieve, because we have a kind of geology that's very high risk, very high arsenic, very high sulfur. It's really just sort of beyond the fringe of what technology can address as mitigating. So what they did is take all those environmental laws that were limiting, like, for example, the groundwater contamination law that applies to every other business in Maine, even schools, hospitals, transportation facilities, have to meet this standard of no contamination of groundwater. Only mining that doesn't. So they packaged all those impossible to meet environmental laws that apply to all other development in Maine mm-hmm. and called it streamlined permitting for mining. Mm-hmm. And they brought it to the JSC-ENR very, very late in session. Nobody knew it was coming. There wasn't a hint of it, even though there was great evidence that it had been discussed in meetings with the governor and between Saviello and Martin and Troy Jackson and all those guys for a very long time. And the JSC-ENR, the rest of the members weren't really twigged in, and they did their best to plug the holes and listen to what the environmental people were saying at the time. And they did get one or two holes plugged, but basically the law got passed on a false promise of being a huge possible job creator for Aroostook County, which is also false. And it's taken 4 years of working the consequence of that through to finally get to, well, we're not even going to try to fix it by rules anymore. We really have to fix this law. The environmental community has been, for 2-3 rounds now, have tried to accept that they were defeated on the groundwater contamination and kept trying to advance other mitigation measures or other controls that were not forbidden in statute that would have improved the level of protection, and JSC-ENR just was not, cooperating in in bringing those kinds of provisions into the rules. So the public has been victorious twice, as I'm sure you know, overriding the Joint Standing Committee on Environment and Natural Resources.
Through the full legislature.
Rejection rules previously.
The full legislature voting it down.
Yes, overwhelming bipartisan, a 3-1 or something. It was a huge, huge vote.
Again, you are listening to Radioactive on WERU Community Radio. We're speaking with Lindsay Newland Bowker. Today, the Maine Board of Environmental Protection has voted to support proposed changes to environmental regulations that would allow metallic mining in Maine. How does it keep on coming back? It is, I realize it's complicated because there's different layers to this process, but to see it voted down in the legislature and it keeps on coming back and coming back through the process, what is the impetus and the motivators? Who's pushing this?
Well, it keeps coming back to the legislature because the governor has made his commitment, obviously, to J.D. Irving, that there will be mining at Bald Mountain under terms that will make it profitable for them, or to anybody else that already owns land with identified metallic minerals. So that's their commitment. And they really fear that if these provisions that were, well, first of all, they fear that if they open it up for any kind of public discussion, it will close all possibility of mining. I think that may be a fear, and at this point, that's a very legitimate one. But, you know, what the public's will is and how these committees operate and what their relationship is with leadership and with the governor's office, those are two different planes of existence. And it's the confluence of those two planes when something finally hits the floor for a vote, as opposed to the committee, where a commonality of value is identified. And I think it's been identified for mining in both of these defeats.
And do you think that if it's voted down in the full legislature this time, that will be the end of it? Or do you see an opening for J.D. Irving and associates to continue?
Well, it doesn't advance. It doesn't help anything to simply vote down these rules again. If we don't confront trying to build a sensible, responsible, durable legal framework that's impermeable to political changes in winds, and that does allow for responsible mining if ever anything like that should ever become possible, then the game isn't worth the candle. You know, it's just a useless exercise to defeat these rules again. That doesn't mean anything. So the victory that we're all looking for and the push that we're all hoping for is to force the JSCENR and the Conservation Committee, who have to fix up their thing there with the mining on public land, to both act responsibly and revisit that law. And to do it with outside of a political framework. I gave Tom Saviello a very detailed map of how to do that, you know, of how to get independent, state-of-the-art, fundamental foundations for modern mining law from mining experts in all the different areas that are relevant in mining, mining economics, geology, geochemistry, all of those, and bring it back and as a skeleton, and then we can all work on fleshing that out and putting flesh on it. But if it's not rescued from this tangle between the governor and J.D. Irving and Tom Saviello and the JSCENR, it's just like, what was that horrible movie? Groundhog.
Groundhog Day.
Same day over and over and over. So we hope it's not that. We'll see. But people are pretty well worn down and they're pretty well frustrated that so little was really accomplished this round.
Where can people go for more information on a very complicated issue? But there's, as you said, a lot of research being done.
Well, so I would suggest that you read the public comments. There is a website up that's easy to find from either BEP or DEP. Mm-hmm. that actually has all of the public comments that were submitted. And there are some really outstanding ones. So people can look by the area they're interested in. So people that are interested in fish habitat, you know, can go to Jeff Reardon's testimony. And people that are interested in public health issues could go to Bruce Taylor's testimony. And that way people can get really solid background on what the issues are from really responsible people and frame their own terms of engagement. And I think it's going to take a massive public engagement, not of form letters, but from the heart, you know, speaking about whatever aspect of mining impacts is nearest and dearest to their heart and concern in their own voice. And being very present to it personally, because these few dozen really responsible public advocates can't just do it all by themselves.
Do you have a website yourself that people can look at?
Yes, it has several pieces on this issue on there. It's Lindsay Newland Bowker at WordPress.com.
So that's Lindsay Newland Bowker, B-O-W-K-E-R. And go ahead, you said you had some articles.
At WordPress.com. And there's several analysis pieces in there on this issue that I've written. But one in particular I would point people to where my expertise is in what causes catastrophic failure at mine sites. I've written several internationally reviewed, peer-reviewed papers on that. I'm known for that all over the world. And I submitted an evaluation of Maine's rules, its statute, and what could be accomplished within the existing statute to plug the holes that would prevent catastrophic mine failures. So I would commend that piece to all of your listeners with the notation that DEP did not acknowledge or respond to even one of the things on my list of documented root causes of catastrophic failure that every mining and regulatory statute must have if it really expects to prevent that loss at that level.
Well, Lindsay Newland Bowker, Environmental Risk Manager for Bowker Associates Science and Research in the Public Interest, we thank you for joining us today, and we'll be keeping up with this issue as it now goes again to the Legislative Committee for a public hearing before going for a full vote, if it's indeed recommended.
Thank you, Meredith, and thank all you folk at WERU for your fidelity to this and so many other issues of great concern in our community. We thank you so much.
Thank you. Again, Lindsay Newland Bowker spoke with us today directly after the Maine Board of Environmental Protection voted to support proposed changes to environmental regulations that would allow metallic mining in the state of Maine. This is now the third time in the last 5 years the Department of Environmental Protection has tried to push rule changes through the state and legislature where it has been voted down. Widespread public opposition has organized around combating the DEP's proposed rule changes while trying to offer alternative protections to the state's current inadequate statute. Changes to Maine's mining law were originally designed by J.D. Irving, who has interests in mining Bald Mountain in Aroostook County. Today's Board of Environmental Protection vote kicks the rule changes again to the legislature. And you've been listening to Radioactive on WERU Community Radio. You can listen to archives of this and other locally produced public affairs programming at weru.org.